I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match.
Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality. And today, we're going to take a little turn, and we're going to celebrate some solutions. We're going to take the time this day to look at what's happening across the United States to end federal tyranny. You know, I wonder sometimes if our problems are not exacerbated by the fact that we feel helpless. Like we feel that there are no solutions to our problem except for violent revolution. You know, if we had actually been created as a kingdom, that would be a reality, because the only response in a kingdom when you don't like your king is to have a bloody revolution and chop off his head. But we are not a kingdom, and that's not what our framers created, and they did that on purpose. They created a constitutional republic where checks and balances would be placed in multiple levels so that we could peaceably alter and abolish our government. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. But whenever any form of government becomes contrary to those ends, it is the duty of the people to alter or abolish. Now, for our framers, that meant revolution, because they were subjects of a kingdom. And they didn't want to condemn that inevitability upon their posterity. So they shunned the kingdom model and went for a constitutional republic. Remember, the lady asks Benjamin Franklin, "What kind of government did you give us, Mr. Franklin?" He said, "A republic if you can keep it." Why would that be a difficult thing? You would think that people having power, that government through equal representation, would be such an amazing and attractive thing, such a successful business model, that the people would jealously cling to it. Well, the truth of the matter is, every single government on the planet wants to be a kingdom. And that's the inevitability of government. They want to consume more and more power. Some governments think it's okay to have all that power because they're good and benevolent, and they want to do great things, and they believe that their multiple minds are better than the minds of the individual, and they can come together with great plans and impose them upon the people for their better good, because it's a utopian type of mentality. Some are not benevolent, but are malevolent. Some people just want power because evil men gravitate to unlimited and arbitrary power. The real thing that we have to look here is not what is the difference, but what is the similarity. Benevolent or malevolent, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, when government has that much power, the people have no liberty. And liberty is something that we were supposed to be fighting for, something worth fighting for. My friend Dave Benner has an article published in the 10th Amendment Center this week, and it's a very nice article. I really enjoyed it. It's called The Constitutional Case for Gridlock, and it's funny because we operate under misconception of the government all the time. It's something that I talk about quite a bit. The fact that government's not supposed to run smoothly. Government's not supposed to operate freely. It's supposed to be opposed. The states are supposed to be jealously guarding their power. The people are supposed to be jealously guarding their rights. And when people are jealously guarding something, and then as we've established, government always wants to take it, there's going to be opposition. James Madison wrote in Federalist Number 10, "Liberty is to faction what air is to fire, an ailment without which it instantly expires." But it could not be less folly to abolish liberty, which is essential to political life, because it nourishes the faction, than it would be to wish the annihilation of air, which is essential to animal life, because it imparts to fire its destructive agency. And see, that's the real problem that we're having in America today, is this lack of understanding of liberty and the proper placement of power. We are become so addicted to federal action and federal funding and federal assistance that we want it quickly, and we want more of it, and we want it unimpeded, and we want to make sure that we have equal and frequent access. And the balancing of liberty just seems to get in the way, so much so that it's not really even something that the government wants to consider anymore. I mean, listen to the ideas of our government today. I mean, we have Republican and Democrat alike mouthing things like, there can't be, you can't have 100% privacy and security at the same time. You hear them say things like, we must balance our need for national security with the rights of the people. No, they're not supposed to be balanced. They're not supposed to be cooperations. They're not even supposed to get along with each other or like each other. Liberty and government power are enemies. They don't play well together, and they're not supposed to play well together. They create faction. They create opposition. It's just ironic, isn't it? Of all the division that government creates today, we have division in races. We have division in party politics. We have division in classes. We have division in ideologies. And we're amplifying all of these divisions to create division within the people, within the body of the people, amongst ourselves. When the one true division that ought to be fostered, encouraged, and fertilized is the division between liberty and government. That's the flame that ought to be fanned. Not a division amongst the people, but a division between the people and their government. You see, this is absolutely necessary for liberty to survive. And the survival of liberty is absolutely necessary for human life. And that's exactly what James Madison was saying. You cannot squash liberty and still maintain your life. So we've got to get a different perspective. I just really had an epiphany this morning as I was studying for today's radio show, and I do study for my shows. I don't just simply pull up the news and start ranting and raving about them. I actually study because, remember, this is not your average talk show. I'm not here to simply rant and rave and point fingers and lay blame. I really, really believe that losers point fingers and winners find solutions. And where identifying the source of our problem is necessary to fixing the problem. Empty, emotional blame. Drama-driven blame serves no purpose. Other than, mind you, to create more division. And so solutions are unifying, right? Solutions bring people together with a plan. And we've identified the problem. We've identified the perpetrators of the problem. And now we're going to come together in a plan. And we're going to work together as a body of people who love their liberty, who want to eschew government power and make sure it's in its proper place, limited by the body of the people. And we want to come together and work together as a body of people in the jealous preservation of liberty. As my friend David Benner points out, and as I often teach in the workshops that I do, Montesquieu was a philosopher that our framers really, really looked to in understanding the necessity for separation of powers. Montesquieu wrote in 1748 a document called The Spirit of the Laws, in which Montesquieu said that when power is consolidated into one person or into one body, liberty cannot survive. Now, we need to recognize that these are general principles for government as a whole. He wasn't saying, hey, American citizens, if your federal government, if the president consolidates all the power in the House of the President, then Congress has no power and the judiciary has no power and they have less power, then liberty cannot survive. The general principle is if power is consolidated into one person or one body, and that being the federal government body, then liberty cannot survive. That's why the Confederation of the states, not the consolidation, was necessary as a check and balance, because power would be distributed between the several states to control their single creation, the body of the federal government. So let's look at this solution. The solution inherent within the constitutional republic system, not a kingdom where the federal government is superior to the people and their states for their every whim and fancy, where we have nothing to do but appeal to the federal government for the relinquishment of the power that they've seized. See, that's the irony of it all, right? We are not a kingdom. We are a constitutional republic where the people hold all the rights. That's what the Ninth Amendment says. Power emanates from the people. We have delegated a majority of government power to the states through the Lee Resolution in 1776. The states then coming together in mutual consensual agreement delegates a small portion of their power to the federal government in 1787. So we have this flow of power. And we, within this flow of power, we have established essential checks and balances. Hamilton, Madison, Jefferson, Jay. I mean, they all talk about, even our anti-federalists talk about, the absolute necessity of the states to be the check and balance on their creation, the federal government. And so what we have now is a constitutional republic and not a federal kingdom. And yet, those in government want to convince us that although we are a constitutional republic, that our only options are kingdom options, right? So if the federal government is doing more than has been delegated to do, is usurping power and taking land and taking property and taking rights from the people by exercising more power than what was delegated to them, our only real solution is suing the federal government. How do we sue the federal government? In federal court. Do you see what that is? That is such a kingdom mentality. That is petitioning the federal government for relief. It is coming to the federal kingdom and saying, "Will you please consider our plight and offer mercy on us as it is within your power to have mercy on us?" You see, asking them to voluntarily relinquish a power that has been illegally obtained by them. Really? Think about that on a personal level. If someone came and robbed your house, stole your most precious jewels, your most precious items in your house, you found out where the robber lived. You first sent the robber a letter. "Please, dear robber, return my precious items. I beg of you, please." You then, hearing no answer or response from your letter, or maybe even receiving a letter that the robber says, "Well, we've heard your request and we're simply not going to honor it because we have the stuff, which means we have the power to have the stuff." So then you go to the robber's house and you knock on the door and you say, dear robber, please let me in to your home." And you come into the robber's home. The robber says, "Sure, we'd love to have you in our home. Please come in our home." And you sit down in the robber's home and you say, "I would like for you to return my most precious things that you have taken from me." And the robber says, "Well, that's a very interesting request. Let me gather all the members of our family in this house, and we will sit around in the table and we will discuss whether we should return your items or not. We will allow you to make a plight for your items before the members of this household, and then we will consider your plea and discuss and determine whether we need to return the items that belong to you. How do you suppose that's going to work out for you?" It's an absolutely ridiculous supposition that the robber would ever turn over your items. So why do we expect that the federal government would act any differently?
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So the federal government has stolen your stuff and inviting yourself and asking permission to come into their judicial houses and asking and giving your plea to their government family to determine whether your items should be returned or not is just as ridiculous as asking a robber and his family to return the items they've stolen from you. So what's the real solution then? Well, the real solution is that you and all the neighbors on your street get together. everybody on the entire block comes together on your behalf. Because, you see, they understand that if the robber can come rob your house and then refuse to return your items, that they're next. Their household is next. So what do? You then make a plea to them and say, look, this is what happened to my house. And if we don't stand together, it's coming to your house next. And the neighbors will be like, well, yeah, that's right. Come on now, let's go, because ain't nobody coming in my house. I'm not going to let that happen. So let's all get together and go over to the robber's house. And so everybody in the neighborhood, in group unison, goes over to the neighbor's house and bangs on the door and says, robber, you will let us in your house, and we will retrieve those items. Because if you refuse our demand, you will have every single one of us to deal with. Thomas Paine said, it's not in numbers that we gather strength, but in unity. And so the unity of the people in the neighborhood, banging down the door of the robber, will either coerce the robber to returning the items of his own volition, or establish a mechanism by which the people can take back those items because they overpower the robber. And I want to mention to you, that's exactly what's happening. Amazing things happening in the United States. Massachusetts has a bill that will prevent the federal government in taking data collection, warrantless collection of electronic data. A privacy bill that would prohibit the collection of electronic data from communication service providers without a warrant in most cases. It's not exactly perfect, but it's a step in the right direction. That would effectively block an NSA data sharing program. And it continues. This bill is working its way through the Massachusetts legislature. Last spring, a bipartisan coalition of 36 legislators introduced Senate Bill 903. It would prohibit any Massachusetts government agency, including law enforcement, from obtaining personal electronic records from a third-party provider without either a judicially issued warrant or subpoena, with only a few exceptions. See, this is a very important key. A judicially issued warrant. Not a federal government issued warrant. Not a coalition of federal lawyers issued warrant. Not a national security agency issue warrant, but a judicially issued warrant where it could be challenged through proper due process. You see, the Patriot Act excludes that. The NSA data collection programs that we have now all exclude that. And they allow the federal government to decide when and where and how they take your stuff. Except in a judicial proceeding alleging a violation of this section, no information obtained in violation of this section shall be admissible in any criminal court, civil, administrative, or other proceeding. This is an amazing step in the right direction. I want to mention that where Massachusetts is attempting, are you ready for this? I hope you're buckled in. California has succeeded. Signed into law two California bills to protect privacy against warrantless surveillance. On October 8th, California Governor Jerry Brown. I know you can't believe this. It's hard to really accept. But you see, the Civil Liberties Union is really, really up on this warrantless search thing. They've actually got the liberty issue right on this one. And because the American Civil Liberties Union is all in favor of this, obviously California, who are big supporters of the ACLU, are going to be in favor of limiting warrantless searches. And so, on October 8th, California Governor Jerry Brown signed into law not just one, but two bills putting into place privacy protections, which are among the strongest in the country. Wow, is that a conviction on the rest of our constitutional, conservative, Republican states? That California, of all places, has the strongest legislation and the strongest protection of our personal liberty of privacy? I wonder if our conservative Republicans are so ate up with security over liberty that they cannot see the value in this. They've lost that understanding that John Adams said that liberty must be supported at all hazards. Not security. Liberty. The strongest bills that say no to warrantless government snooping exist in California. Well, Florida, in spite of their federal supremacists in Tallahassee, I am a Floridian, so I am all too familiar with the nature of our government here in Florida. They are absolutely filled with federal supremacists who have nothing but party loyalty. I think I heard the other day, every legislator in the state of Florida with the exception, every Republican legislator in the state of Florida with the exception of two or three have publicly endorsed Jeb Bush for president. Not because they believe Jeb Bush would be a good president. Not even because they like Jeb Bush. But because the Republican Party has demanded it. Jeb Bush owns Florida. And the Republican Party in Florida wants to see Jeb Bush as president. I mean, my husband has had personal conversations with Florida legislators who have said, look, I don't agree with Jeb Bush, but I can't oppose him because Florida is his state. This is where you are. But Florida, 2 weeks ago, a bill was filed with the Florida State House authorizing the farming, production, and sale of industrial hemp in the state, which would effectively nullify, in practice, a federal prohibition. This is going to be a difficult day for me, so you're just going to have to give me a little bit of grace. A federal prohibition on the farming, production, and sale of industrial hemp. You realize hemp is not marijuana. They are not the same thing. Hemp makes rope. Hemp makes clothes. Hemp is not rolled into a cigarette and smoked. They are different. Hemp is considered an agricultural crop. This is what the legislation reads. Hemp is considered an agricultural crop in this state that produces a viable, environmentally sound crop requiring less irrigation, fewer pesticides, and fewer toxic refinery processes than alternative materials, and has multiple applications that include a wide variety of manufactured and fabricated products. Now let's turn this around and understand that the federal government has prohibited the people from growing this environmentally conscious product. I thought we were all about environment. I thought we were all about this. Well, apparently not. Because it is proven that hemp is more environmentally sound than cotton or petroleum polymers that make the majority of your clothes. It is cheaper to manufacture, and the product lasts longer. How is it that we have entered into a place, a government of the people, by the people, for the people? How is it we've entered into a place where the federal government can dictate what we can and cannot grow, to create clothes for our own bodies. It's not like we're trying to grow, to use nuclear material to make clothes that would be toxic to our bodies. Little nuclear reactors on our bodies. That's not what we're asking to do. We're not asking to make things and grow things that knowingly and willfully endanger the lives of the people. Quite to the contrary. We're asking to be able to grow things that are better for the human body and better for the environment. And the federal government says no. Why? Why do they say no? Because they can. There's no reason. Just because they can. Some lobbyist was opposed to it. The cotton lobbyers or the petroleum lobbyers or some lobbyist somehow lobbied the federal government for this draconian bill. And so now we can't grow hemp without being charged with a federal crime and having a federal SWAT team raid our homes and flashbang our houses. Burn our crops to the ground. And Florida's going to say no. We're going to grow what we want to grow. Because the federal government was never delegated the power to tell us what we can produce and what we can't produce.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up.
Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Now it will be interesting, very, very interesting to see if this perfectly reasonable piece of legislation, absolutely constitutionally based piece of legislation, will actually make it through Tallahassee. There are two problems with that. Number one, the legislation was put forward by a Democrat, which is already going to create partisan opposition. Because the Republicans in the state of Florida can't possibly be seen supporting anything that the Democrats do. It is such a politically motivated, party ate up state that it's nearly repulsive to the very senses of reason and logic. The other problem is, like I said, Florida is consumed with federal supremacists. So you would have to have enough Republicans who would be willing to stand with a Democrat in a perfectly reasonable, logical, liberty-minded, constitutionally conservative bill. And then you would have to have enough of those Republicans additionally who are willing to oppose the federal government. But here's the deal. You have the power to make sure that happens, Florida. Now, everything that I've been telling you about today is you can be found at the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. The 10thAmendmentCenter.com is dedicated to limited federal government and providing sample legislation and helping these local and state governments create ordinances and legislations, state legislations, to limit the federal government and reduce the federal government back to its original delegated powers. The next thing we're going to be talking about here is Kansas. And Kansas is an amazing state already. They are an amazing sovereign state. And a bill that was pre-filed in Kansas House represents an important step toward limiting the influence of federal government and could open the door to stopping a wide range of federal programs. This bill says no state agency, state agent, or state employee shall enter into any agreement, including, but not limited to, cost-sharing agreements and grants, which obligates the state of Kansas to any explicit or implied maintenance effort requirements without the express prior consent of the Kansas legislature. Guess what? No agency, no agent, or state employee can accept federal funding without express consent of the Kansas legislature. They're going to have to pass legislation to accept federal funding and federal strings. That is absolutely amazing. I can't believe how amazing that is. And that's exactly what should be happening. I'm telling you, the 10thAmendmentCenter.com is all over this. And if you are not following them, and if you are not supporting them, then you are missing some of the biggest solutions. The biggest solutions that we have to limiting federal government. Not suing the federal government, not asking the federal government to fix themselves, not voting and changing out the occupant of the White House, but real, hardcore, in your hands, roll up your sleeves, solutions that are working, have worked, and will work. Before we close, I want to put this in right away. On October 1st, Montana signed into law a bill that will diminish the impact of the militarization of our police by the federal government. What this bill does is it bans state or local law enforcement from receiving significant classes of military equipment from the Pentagon's 1033 program. It passed by a vote of 46-1 in the Senate and 79-20 in the State House. And what happens now is they cannot purchase this equipment. This is amazing. It ends the federal strings that will puppeteer our local law enforcement to be federal agents. This is a huge guard of liberty for the people of Montana and something that should be happening all over the United States. It's time to stop complaining and listening to our government talk about the powerless nature that they exist in. It's time for us to take back our governments. You must go to the 10th Amendment Center. You must understand what this is all about and see how this really, really works. We have the power. We are the powerful ones in America. It's time we step up and realize it. God bless. See you tomorrow.